What's going on? This is Happy Hour. I am your host, Ryan Hoppy, and on the phone line from 106.1 BLI in Long Island, Psych is on the show. What's going on, bro?
I'm Hoppy, first of all, very excited to be welcomed onto the show. But secondly, it's on Long Island. You Floridians, you don't know. It's on Long Island, not in Long Island.
Really? Is that how it goes? Yeah. I know nothing about being on Long Island. Like 5 years ago, I went to New York for about 2 days to go sit in on Eric Nagel's show at Sirius Radio, but it was in and out. So I was so overwhelmed from just the whole experience. Like, I ended up losing my wallet when I was going through security heading back, because like people were like shoving me, like, move, dude. So like I ended up losing my wallet. Like, it was I'm just so not about, it's not that I'm not about New York, but I know nothing about New York, if that makes sense.
It's an interesting place to live. Some people that have been here for 20, 30, 40 years still can't figure out how to live in New York, so it's okay.
What's the energy like? So do you guys just accept that Andrew Cuomo is your president? Like, I don't want to get too political, but I talked to JP about this last week. I'm just curious, like, what's the energy going on? Like, because nationwide, it seems like some people care. How do you guys deal with it?
So he started out really, really scorching hot with COVID. Everybody was all like, you know, as they said, they were calling themselves Cuomo-sexuals. They were super attracted to Andrew Cuomo and everything he brought to the table and his press conferences, how he's handling this. Oh, my goodness, this man should be our president. And everybody really fell in love with him super quick. And then right around the time he released his book about beating COVID and you know, winning in a pandemic, which, by the way, he released in the middle of the pandemic while people were still coming down with the virus and people were dying. The man wrote a book about beating the pandemic before it had actually been beaten. So right around that time was when people, you start to see a little bit of a change, a tiny little bit of a change. That's when people started saying, all right, maybe this guy isn't exactly as great as we think he is, but hey, he's still okay. Then right around Thanksgiving time, he put that max on, you know, no more than 10 people at your Thanksgiving. And I thought it was interesting because at least here on Long Island, people always complain about having to see their family members on Thanksgiving. And all of a sudden, people really suddenly cared about seeing their family members on Thanksgiving. And that's when I knew the tide was turning. People in New York, they don't like to be told what they have to do or what they need to do. They like to make those decisions for themselves. I think that's pretty much the case for people, you know, anywhere, not even just New York, but New York and Long Island especially. So once he started laying down these little edicts, he got the moniker of King Cuomo, which kind of became a big joke, and we still kind of joke about it. I don't know. The guy, he was doing a great job in the beginning, and, you know, he did what he had to do to take care of business, and he kept people calm, and he kept people feeling, you know, safe, and that was great, but he went from hero to zero real quick, and with these allegations of now sexual harassment, and even an aide on his staff currently coming forward with allegations. I mean, that's not somebody that used to work for him or, you know, has a grudge to hold. Like, she actually still works for the dude. You know, that's the craziest thing, is that somebody that actually is still going to work for this guy every single day came out and said, yeah, no, I have my own little story of sexual harassment. So, I think there are still your Andrew Cuomo fans up here that are really, really super in love with the guy. I consider myself moderate politically. I don't have a party that I assign myself to. I see things in both parties that I like and both, you know, parties that I dislike. But as far as I'm concerned, I think he went from hero to zero really, really quick. And it's interesting to watch where this is going to go coming up for re-election next year too. Yeah. I think it's going to be super interesting to see what happens.
My thing, bro, that I've learned probably over the last 4 years is that none of them care about us because I haven't gotten my check yet and I don't know where to turn to. I type in all my info on the IRS website and it's like, you don't exist is essentially what it said. I don't know what's going on. And I'm just accepting, like, my thing, bro, is I don't like the people that lean too much on the left or lean too much on the right and then worship these people. It's like, if it's Kamala, Biden, Cuomo, Trump, none of them care about us. They maybe want to help us a little bit, but it's about the power trip. And I just don't know why more people don't realize that.
Well, and first of all, we have way more in common than just being in radio because, like yourself, I have yet to get my stimulus check. Not one of them, not even the very first one that Trump had pushed through. Yeah, I haven't gotten a single one. And at first I was like, maybe I just make too much money. Maybe me and my wife combined, we make too much. But then my brother-in-law, who makes the same amount, he got his. So I'm like, there's definitely something up here. So just so you know, at least in New York, I don't know about Florida, if you're going to do your taxes, and I know they extended the tax deadline, if and when you do your taxes, apparently there's a line on the form when doing your taxes this year. Tell your accountant that they can declare you didn't get it. Apparently they'll lump in whatever stimulus money you did not get into your tax return. So just a little tip for you there. I don't know if that's the case. We'll find out. I'll let you know when I get my tax return and I get my money. But you're right. As far as politicians are concerned, that's why I consider myself moderate, because I don't really vote on party or candidate. I vote based on two or three really important issues that I think whoever I'm voting for can make a difference on. I know people are like, oh, well, there's so much more than two or three issues. I'm like, yeah, I get that. But I think you got to really find the things that are important to you and your family and make the decision that's best for you and your family. As far as, you know, politicians really caring, I'm not going to say that they all don't care. I would say you could probably count on two hands the amount of politicians that are out there that really do genuinely care. I think they all get into politics to make a difference and to help. And I think they start out caring.
Yeah.
But I think once you become one, it's just like anything else. Once you become part of it, there's no going back. It's like, what's the line, you know, in the mafia movies, once they have me, I thought I was out, but they pulled me back in. Like, I feel like that's how it is. Once you're one of them, you can't ever go back and you can't ever become something else. I definitely think Democrat, Republican, as far as politicians are concerned, I think they all just get together on Sunday night for a big dinner and have a big laugh about us.
This is the most random thought, but it's just how my brain works. You bringing up like mafia movies. Dude, I've had this problem recently because I've watched The Wire and Sopranos and Sons of Anarchy in its prime. Nothing compares to it. I don't know if you're having that recently, but it feels like there's so many options to watch TV everywhere that it feels like there's a lot of content, but it feels like not all the content is good. I don't know if you noticed that.
No, I agree with you 100%. How old are you?
27.
All right, so I'm 37, so I got a decade on you, and I'll agree with you. Shows like Sopranos, I mean, you're not going to ever find a show to top that. What I will say is I feel like there have been shows that have come along that could have been that epic, but they may have wrapped up too quickly. Like, for example, House of Cards was a fantastic show. House of Cards is one of my favorite shows, I think, in the past 20 years. Such a great show, so perfectly written. Casting was amazing. The acting was superb. Kevin Spacey was fantastic in the role. He just turned out to be a big doucher and did some pretty creepy things that they had to wrap the show. And then, you know, they had to make his wife on the show the lead, and she was great. But yeah, it's like having a chocolate chip cookie and not having chocolate chips. Like, you can't have, you know, the star of a show just be removed and be like, oh, you're gonna try the show without him. It just doesn't work. So I think, you know, what Kevin Spacey had done, that ruined House of Cards. So, you know, and rightfully so, he should have been punished. So I feel like we got jacked with House of Cards. Another great show was Newsroom with Jeff Daniels. That was a fantastic show. But I respect that they took it off quick because I don't think they wanted to try too hard. I think they were like, you know what, we came in guns blazing, we had a great couple seasons. Why are we going to ruin something and try and go further when there's no need to? But you're right. Another example would be right now, and they're actually going to be coming up on the final season on Netflix, is Ozark. I don't know if
so good. Ozark, so good, dude.
Such a great show. So I would disagree with you in that there's really not anything out there. There are, I think it's so much harder to find now because there are so many different platforms to go through that. You just don't know. I mean, think of how many times you talk to somebody and like, oh, are you watching this show? And you're like, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
And what I've learned is to, when my TV, I've always followed the rule of, you know, never judge a book by its cover. You never can really make an assumption on something until you know at least a little bit about it. So I would always have these assumptions about this show's going to suck, this show's going to be this. And a perfect example of that would be The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. I thought for sure that was going to be a show just for my wife. Like, I thought it was just based upon what I thought it was going to look like, you know, in the trailer, and what it was going to be based on what it looked like in the trailer. There's no way. I was like, I'm not watching this. And I came home one night, my wife had an episode on. It was like halfway through, I sat down, and I fell in love with it. And now I think I actually love it more than she does. But I had no idea. It's loosely based on how Joan Rivers got her start in comedy. So, you know, if you can kind of go in with that mindset and watch an episode or two, again, I think it's just, like you said, that it's the content's not as good, but I think that's part of the reason being there are just so many different options now for content.
Well, you know what I'm ending up doing recently is I'm going back and watching old sitcoms. So, like, I cannot handle Seinfeld because that was all my dad. That was all my dad watched. So it's just like, yeah. I have like an overdose of it being on growing up. But like, I'll go back and watch like King of Queens, Cheers, Married with Children, Futurama, Simpsons. Like, that's what I've been doing recently is like, I feel so much pressure going through Netflix, Hulu, HBO Max, trying to find something that I'll be like, you know what? I'm going to watch Fresh Prince tonight. That's kind of what I've been doing recently.
No, I love that. And I think that's so fun. I'm doing the same thing with Golden Girls, Cheers, which, by the way, you mentioned Cheers. Cheers had like 20 something seasons. I don't know how long, maybe 12 seasons. They had like 12 seasons and there's like 40 episodes per season.
So I know.
I feel like even binging Cheers, it still would take you like 3 or 4 years to finish the whole series. But no, we do the same thing. I'll never get tired of The Office. I have maybe seen every episode of The Office and Parks and Rec 30, 40 times. And it's like comfort food. I could sit down and it's like Anchorman. Every time I watch Anchorman, I always pick up on like some new, you know, mannerism or some new tick that each character has that just adds something to the episode that I didn't catch before. But I'm the same way. There's a lot of good TV out there that, you know, it happened years and years ago. Like Golden Girls. I was alive when Golden Girls was on, but I don't remember every single episode. I remember, in passing. And the cool thing is, too, I mean, you know, you're 27, I'm 37. Watching some of these things, you don't realize how good they were, you know, and how funny they were back then and how, you know, ahead of their time. You put on Golden Girls, some of the comedy that the Golden Girls were getting away with, you scratch your head and you're like, that wouldn't work today. Like, that would not fly today on TV. Golden Girls, I'm guaranteeing you, by the second season would have been canceled due to cancel culture. If some of the jokes that you see on Golden Girls back in the 80s got through TV today, they would have been canceled. So it's kind of cool to go back because you kind of get some humor and some you know, storytelling and script writing that you wouldn't be able to get nowadays.
What do you think of cancel culture? For me, I'm very, very indifferent. Like, I thought it was perfect that they got rid of the Dr. Seuss books because those were not good books from the pictures you've seen. I don't really care about the Looney Tunes cartoon they got rid of because I don't watch Looney Tunes. But I can't figure out how I feel about it because I feel like it hurts the creative process because you're afraid of offending people. But I also think it's preventing homophobic, sexist, and racist jokes. So it's just like, I'm so indifferent about cancel culture. I just don't know, like, what is your opinion on it?
I think it's what it's become. I'm not in love with.
Yes.
Because it's not necessarily anything. At this point, you can cancel anything for any reason.
Yes.
And we've run rampant with just the minute somebody says something we don't like, we have the ability to just go on social media, bash them and turn their words and turn something into, you know, a much bigger deal than it really is. So from that perspective, what it's become, I'm disgusted by. I don't think there's any need for that. I think people, if they have an issue with somebody, should go to that person or, you know, take issue with that specific person or that specific issue. I don't think going to the masses and blasting it out to thousands of people is really any, you know, buddy's business. I think it's something that you need to handle on your own. And so from that perspective, yeah, what needs to be canceled should be canceled. Things like, you know, homophobia and racism and sexism and offensive things that are said for the purpose of hurting others. I think that's where the fine line in comedy comes, is that there needs to be an understanding that sometimes, you know, jokes are going to be made and things are going to be said, you know, from comedians, for example, that, you know, there's that understanding going in that, okay, I'm probably going to hear some things that are offensive, but for them, from the perspective of comedy and entertaining me, versus actually getting out there behind closed doors and saying something terrible and doing something terrible that hurts somebody or a group of people. But I mean, you know this, how many people out there have such a thin skin nowadays that you can't even, you know, sneeze near them. I mean, in times of COVID, if you sneeze near somebody in a CVS, even wearing a mask, you might be canceled on social media. People are just super, super sensitive. And I think people just need to take a chill pill, relax, take a deep breath, really think about what's important in their life, focus on that. And yeah, when the opportunity, arises that somebody does something inappropriate or wrong or hurtful or offensive, those people will eventually get what's coming to them. But I think the fact that we go out there and we just, you know, cancel somebody, you know, for just saying something we didn't like, I mean, that's a little ridiculous. So I think there needs to be ground rules. I think cancel culture itself has just become something fun to do for people, more so than it has actually regulating what shouldn't be said. So I don't like it from the entertainment perspective. I mean, you get all these, you know, BTS, for example, you get their fans out there that, God forbid, you say something they don't like, even if it's not offensive or hurtful. Let's say you just don't like one of their songs and you put that out there on social media. I mean, forget it. You know, you got hundreds of thousands of fans, you know, sending you death threats. And that's the other interesting thing, by the way, is that you get cancel culture and you get all these people that are like, you can't say something that hurts me, so I wish you death. It's like, it's totally hypocritical. I don't understand how, you know, you're wishing death on me and my family and, you know, insulting me about my physicality or, you know, wishing, you know, terrible things for my future children that I even haven't, you know, birthed yet because I just said I don't like song, you know, 6 on the new album. Like, to me, it's just so crazy. So I think there's responsibility on both sides. I think people need to be smarter with their words, and I think they have to realize that words have, you know, weight that can hurt people, and I think you have to think about what you're saying before you say it. But on the other side, I think you have to, you know, take things with a grain of salt and really look at what's offensive and what's hurtful versus, okay, that's just somebody's opinion. That's not really, you know, derogatory or hurting me directly.
Two things. So first of all, I would never tweet what Anthony Cumia tweeted 7 years ago. But to me, that was like the game changer, where it was like, if a world famous shock jock can get fired from a top tier show for tweeting offensive things when his act was to be offensive, that was when it changed for me. And then the second thing is that company email. I don't know, because we work for the same company. I don't know if you got it, but it was like essentially saying you can't tweet any opinions. And that's when I forever and ever, I don't tweet any opinions. I'll even like want to like bash the Bears because I'm from Chicago and I hate the Bears. And I go, no, I don't share any opinions anymore on Twitter after like they basically said there was like a whole list of things and it was so overwhelming. I was like, I'm just going to just share my podcast and that's it.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of tough nowadays. I mean, you know, everybody has an opinion, but you're just not allowed to have one publicly. It's kind of funny, you know, it's like politics. And I think that's what their email you're referring to is. It came down right around election time that, you know, specifically politics, let's refrain from, you know, political support for either candidate on social media because you don't know how that can make it look. And hey, listen, I've always said keep politics out of entertainment and keep politics out of, you know, sports and keep politics out of religion. It's just, I think that it's so funny how divisive that can be. But just like anything else, I mean, you have an opinion on politics, you have an opinion on religion, you have an opinion on sports, you have an opinion on culinary, activities, you have an opinion on a restaurant. That's the beauty of where we live, is that there's never going to be 100% of the population that agrees with you. It's always going to be a 50-50 split, but no more 50-50 than politics. I mean, that's really where you can find yourself. You could be as harmless as being like, I really love President Biden on social media, and you're going to get attacked from, 50% of the population out there saying, but did you know he did this? What do you think? Do you support him because he did this? Do you support him because he did this? Or you could go out there and say, oh, I love President Trump. And they'll be like, what do you hear about these allegations? Do you hear about this? And so I think you're kind of playing with fire. If you're going to give an opinion, make sure it's really well-informed and educated. But as far as the Anthony Cumia thing, I mean, that was just stupid what he did. I can't imagine that he sent that tweet thinking, yeah, this should be fine. I won't get any backlash on this.
Dude, that was like a weird day because I remember I was up because I was like, I don't know, 19 or 20. And I was up at like 4 in the morning and I was playing like NBA 2K. And I was like, bro, I was like a diehard fan of Opie and Anthony. Not so much them afterwards when they're doing separate things, but like Opie and Anthony and Howard, like that's like, and some Chicago radio guys are like the reason why I'm in radio. So I remember I was about to go to bed and I got like, I looked at my Twitter and like usually nobody tweets at 4 and I see all his tweets and I just remember I put my head on my pillow and I'm like, uh-oh.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I grew up on Opie and Anthony. I grew up on a lot of those NEW jocks, you know, Leslie Gold, the radio chick, Ron and Fez, one of my all-time favorite radio shows. Ron and Fez, to me, really developed me. There's a few. And it's funny, too. It's always the really controversial, offensive ones that I find I grew up on and gave me a thirst for radio. I mean, Ron and Fez, Opie and Anthony, Howard Stern, Don Imus. You know, Mike and a Mad Dog, not, you know, weren't really so much controversial, but there was always a headline around them about something going on off the air. But you know, they made for great radio. They did stupid things in the end that ultimately led to their demise. But when they were at the top of their game and not, you know, hurting people and offending people or saying stupid things that involved, you know, race or sex or, you know, homosexuality, they had great content. It was just, unfortunately, they said stupid things that that hurt them in the end. But Ron and Fez, man, I mean, they actually, one of my favorite shows that Ron and Fez did was the 9/11 show. It was right after September 11th. Those guys still in the NEW building went in there and they did their shows. And Ron and Fez did such great radio that night. I'll never forget, you know, it's funny, you know, moments in radio, you never forget where you were hearing certain things. And I'll never forget the pizza place I was in front of waiting for my dad in the car as we went to get our pizza that night, on Tuesday night. It was September 11th, 2001. And I'm listening to Ron and Fez on the radio and I was glued. And I think that's so, you know, so cool. We talked about TV before. I love radio more than I love TV. It's the theater of the mind. It's being able to paint a picture in your own head the way you want to paint the picture based on what they're telling you with their words. I love radio. So it's unfortunate that we wind up losing these guys, you know, sometimes to controversy, and rightfully so. They should suffer the consequences and they should, you know, they should lose their jobs a lot of the time. You know, luckily we have guys like Roger and JP on 102.5 The Bone and Mike Calta who don't say anything offensive or inappropriate ever.
JP, I mean, I had him on the other day. He's perfect at being outspoken without being like offensive. Like that guy is like, Anthony Cumia should listen to Roger and JP and figure out how to do it. 'Cause they like ride the line, but then they walk back. They never go over the line. They are perfect at it.
Well, that's why, you know, Stern is so great because, and maybe not as great as he used to be, yeah. With Sirius now with satellite. I'll admit I don't get to listen to Stern as much as I used to when he was on terrestrial radio. I am not a satellite radio guy. It's very rare that I'll turn on satellite radio. I love terrestrial radio. I love the locality of terrestrial radio. But getting back to your point, that's really what made Stern so great on terrestrial radio. And to your point, too, with Roger and JP, is you never want to go past the line because once you've gone past that line, you lose your listeners. You always want to take your listeners up to that line and have them wondering, oh, my God, is he going to do it? Are they going to do it? Are they going to go over that line today? And then walk it back a little bit. It's always the wonder of where this is going and not necessarily, okay, we got there today. And I think that was interesting to note that when Stern went to satellite, everybody was going to be like, you know, everybody was like, oh my God, this is going to be great because he's going to be uncensored and he's going to say really what he thinks and he's going to say everything that he wants to say that he can't say on terrestrial and he's going to get away with so much more and he can curse and he can do weird sexual things and it's going to be funny because, you know, we're going to get the Stern that we've always wished we'd had. And I said, guys, no, he's not. Like, his bread and butter is teasing you guys and getting you guys to believe that he's going to go there, but he's not. And I even said, I was like, I would bet you he doesn't even curse that much. And sure enough, that was the first, if you remember, the first couple of months of Stern on satellite radio was, oh my God, he's really not that different. It's the same. I'm paying for the same show that I could have gotten on terrestrial. And they were almost like mad at him that terrestrial radio, you know, lost Stern. But he came around and eventually people realized that he was good enough to pay for that content. And he's still good enough to pay for that content. But it's funny. Yeah, it's, you know, always going up to that line. You never really want to go past it. And to your point again, a lot of the guys that wind up losing their gigs, you know, they lost those gigs because why? They went past that line. They, they tried to go a little too far than they've gone before.
So out of all the years of listening to the radio and meeting radio people and just everything that you do via radio, what do you bring to your morning show from all the years of listening and learning about radio?
To my morning show specifically, locality, you know, relating to our listeners, understanding that while we have the microphone, our listeners are really the stars of the show. I think the sign of a great host is being able to take the spotlight that's thrust upon you and your co-host and shine it onto people that really aren't even supposed to be in the spotlight, making sure that light directs. It's kind of like I'm a lighting designer guy. You know, I have this big spotlight in my hand, and instead of putting it on myself where it's going to, you know, burn my eyes, I got to shine it away from me and shine it onto other people. And that enables me to do my job a little bit better. So it's understanding that there's this triangle of dialogue between you, your co-host, and the caller. And then that tennis ball goes back and forth, on all three sides. But really, you know, the dominance comes from your callers and your audience and giving them what they're craving and giving them what they want in their morning. And they want to laugh. They don't want to feel down. So if you're having a crappy day, you know, it doesn't matter. You got to realize that these people want positive, happy, fun, you know, laughable content. And you got to get it to them. I think locality is super important. I talk to a lot of these radio personalities, you know, in major markets, top five markets, that they always say, God, I wish we could be more local, you know, because we're doing this stuff that's so cookie cutter and we're doing this stuff that, you know, everybody's got to be talking about as far as, you know, our market is concerned, but we can't really get into the mom and pop pizza shops and we can't really get into the tiny little stories that make our communities tick. And, you know, it's more so about the city than it is the towns. And I mean, I think that's why you guys down in Tampa do such a great job. You are one of, and I'm not even just talking about the Bone or any station in particular. I'm talking about the cluster of stations. You're so locally driven while still being major market, if that makes any sense.
Oh, like, totally. Yeah.
You know, the stations sound major top five market, but yet you still keep it super local and you still respect your towns and you still respect the people in those towns. Maybe it's just because it's Florida and you guys are crazy as shit.
Oh, we are. Yeah.
I mean, that there are days that I wish I was in Florida today doing radio. It would have been such a great day.
It's insane, bro. The calls that we give, man, and these nicknames, these guys just give themselves. We don't even give it to them. They just, yeah. It's just bizarre, bro.
You know, it's funny you say that. And, you know, the third thing I was going to say is creating characters out of your listeners. You know, taking characters. I have a character, you know, Smoke and Lisa. And she's this woman in her mid-50s who suffered a traumatic brain injury back in the 80s after the Mets won the World Series in 86. She was actually shot in the head. And, you know, she's still alive and kicking. She smokes a lot of cigarettes, though she tells us she quits every other day. But she just has this really identifiable voice, just like this. And we've created a character out of her. And people, our listeners, they think she's an actress. They think she's somebody that we hired, that she's on the show, and we pay her. And we don't. And I said, you know what, when you get people that are listening to your show for a listener and not even necessarily you as the host or, you know, your co-host, that's when you really know you've tapped into something special and you're giving them something that they come to the radio show for every single morning. So creating characters out of your listeners and finding content that matters to your listeners, not doing these, you know, these silly little show prep bits that are sent out at 4 o'clock in the morning to really make your morning show tick, everybody. But finding content in your market, in your community, in your office that matters. I've always said your best piece of show prep comes right from your office. The people that are working down the hallway from you, the people in sales, the traffic managers, you know, your security guards, your front desk, you know, receptionists, you're going to find the best content there. So, you know, I always say that's so important is, talk to people. Get off the air. The most important part of your radio show is everything that happens when you're not in the studio. I've always said that, and I'll always believe that. You know, creating content out of, you know, the everyday normal BS. I always ask myself, is this a topic? Is this interesting to people? How can I turn this into a radio bit? So yeah, I would say those are probably the most important, you know, assets and factors of creating a good piece of radio content.
Now, where can people check out your show if they want to listen to it?
We are on the iHeartRadio app. We do have our own BLI app. It's 106.1 BLI. You can find us on iHeartRadio. If you got a smart speaker, you can ask Alexa or Google Play to play 106.1 BLI. And we're also, you know, on social media. You can find us Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and our website. You can stream it there at WBLI.com.
Well, dude, it's been a lot of fun having you on the show. There was like a part of my brain where I had like a mental list of people I've wanted to interview over the years, but I've just been kind of busy and I'm like in this new apartment. So like my brain is much more focused. So then I was like, oh my God, I have not interviewed Psych yet. So that's when I sent you to the DM. So it's been a lot of fun having you on the show, bro.
Well, I have to say, I've been wanting to chat radio with you for quite some time, because I always respected and admired your hustle, even when you get on with Garabo and you used to have your back and forth with Seth. And I just, you guys made for great radio, and you are a great radio guy, and
thank
I admire
you.
Your hustle. I really think you forgot about me because you got yourself a cute girlfriend. That's really what it is.
That's what usually happens. I mean, but this time I learned the right way. I don't know if you were around in 2017 when I'm going to play my hacky sound effect. Yeah, that was 2017 is a year we don't talk about.
Wow, even more so than 2020. Impressive.
Oh, yeah, bro. 2017, man, we all can learn from that. Well, dude, it's been a lot of fun having you on the show. And if you're ever in Tampa or if I'm ever up near you, let's grab a beer, bro.
I'm in, man. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you, bro.
No problem.